Hey, it's John Canzano. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe. And thanks to all the listeners and all of our sponsors who help make the Bald-Faced Truth the number one sports radio show in Portland. Enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. John Canzano.
People don't like to hear the truth all the time. You know, people ask you questions, but they don't actually necessarily want to hear the answers.
Love him.
I mean, I like the guy. I listen to him every day.
Canzano, what's going on, man?
He's dead sexy.
I think he does a damn good job.
I'm going to be rooting for this young Portland team, which, you know, is a terrific team. You guys just have a terrific nucleus.
You pay attention to detail. That's why you're so successful.
I just think he's honest. Yeah. Straightforward and to the point.
You're bringing up something that's probably the average sports fan watching the game didn't pick up on.
I'm really glad to see that someone who speaks their mind is not afraid to tell it how it is.
He's a smart guy, just my dude, man. Yeah, y'all know him, man. I let my mother listen to him.
Hate him.
You don't want to get nobody a second chance. Trump.
To represent that as some sort of subterfuge by John Canzano, I would have expected far better.
He just sounds like an egotistical idiot.
He was rude, crude, and wrong.
Love to hate him.
Yo, John, I can't stand you. I can't stand you, but I come back every day to listen to the show.
Bald faith truth teller.
Who is he to judge?
He can raise your eyebrows a lot.
I was angry. He just got my feathers that day big time.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
So it's kind of a cool moment on Friday. As part of the BFT Foundation Celebrity Golf Tournament, we're out at the Reserve Golf Course. The sponsors are all in place. Oregon Blinds, shout out to you. And my big worry is that, you know, the event is going on, and I've got a lot of people who are working behind the scenes, coordinating the sponsors, coordinating the foursomes, the celebrity golfers, the 27 celebrity golfers that are there who have already been auctioned off to the foursomes to raise money for kids in the community are all scheduled, right? It's like a wedding. And I'm like the wedding organizer. And my big concerns are all the celebrity golfers going to show up? Is everybody, because in prior years, we've got phone calls like an hour or two before the tournament where a celebrity golfer will be like, hey, this came up, or I can't make it, or I'm caught here, or I forgot. We've had that happen. In each year, there's been like one person who just, you know, for whatever reason had to bail. And of course, the foursomes are always good, and I've learned to overbook the airplane as a result of that. So I want to thank all the celebrity golfers who are out at the Reserve participating. Gary Anderson, the Oregon State football coach. He brought four of his assistant coaches with him, which was kind of cool. Mouse Davis was out there, former NFL coach. Brian Grant was out there. And it was Brian Grant that was the last celebrity to arrive and also the one that brought the biggest smile to my face. And people know that Brian Grant was a beloved Blazers player, NBA player, who a lot of people rooted for because they loved the way he played. In fact, I think there's a little bit of Caleb Swanigan in his game. And it reminds me of that kind of guy who's just hardworking, appreciative of the opportunity in the NBA, will be a good rebounder, will score a little. And so when Brian Grant came walking up, there's also the added caveat that we haven't seen or heard a lot from Brian Grant in recent years. And afflicted with Parkinson's disease, there are people wondering, how's he doing? What is he up to? And Brian Grant said, you know, he hadn't played golf in more than a year. And he came walking up carrying his bags. And the first thing that struck me was the big smile on his face. And seeing him come forward, and I was not only relieved that all the celebrities were now in place and the tournament was going to take off and we were on time and all that, but I also thought to myself, like, he looks great. Like, he looks really good. He doesn't, you know, because you worry that, like, hey, over time, a year or two, how is that going to affect him physically? Or other people that I know who have Parkinson's, how does that affect them? So it was great to see Brian Grant out at the event. And then, through the course of the day, and for people who didn't get a chance to participate in the tournament, you missed out. you missed out on seeing the celebrity golfers. You missed out on a great event. And next year, I hope you jump in and grab a part of this and be a part of it. And if you want to be a sponsor, take the bull by the horns and get involved early, because it was a phenomenal day and it was a golf tournament. And I played in a lot of golf tournaments that was unlike any other golf tournament that I've ever been a part of. We have a lot of fun. It's a scramble. There's a lot of fun games on the holes. And it's a treat every time you run into a foursome. Because you run into Gary Anderson on the course, and you run into Brian Grant on the course, and then you cross paths on the tee box with Miles Davis or Amy Troy and Stephanie Strickland. Matt Safino and KGW came out, went live from the course at 5 and 6 o'clock. So I want to thank everybody who was part of it. But the tournament ends. I say goodbye to all the volunteers who came out and spent their time out on the course helping make this a success. I thanked all the sponsors. We gave away a lot of prizes. We gave a championship trophy was awarded. And by the way, there was a three-way tie for the championship. It came down to a tiebreaker. It was phenomenal and very dramatic. And then I go home. And of course, Saturday morning comes and I go to Starbucks. And in Starbucks, I'm sitting in the Starbucks and in walks Brian Grant. Like, now I have seen him twice in a three-day period. And Brian Grant comes in, and he gives me a big hug, and he says, "Man, I have to tell you, I had the best time." Same big smile on his face. And he said, "I hit the golf ball like I've never played before. I was better. My game was better. I don't know what got into me." It's like, you know what golf does to you. It just gives you enough to keep you involved and keep you coming back, right? Well, Brian Grant had a great round of golf. And he said he had his clubs with him, and he was going back out to play again. So I love seeing and hearing that from Brian Grant. For people who care about Brian Grant and where he is, I thought that was a really cool peek into what's going on with him and how good he's doing. And all I can do is thank him and the other celebrities who participated, ranging from Miss Oregon to Gary Anderson to Mike Jorgensen, the Oregon Ducks radio analyst right here on this station, and to the many, many people who volunteered and the sponsors. All I can do is thank them for helping make this a success and for making the tournament the place to be. So it was a lot of fun, and I appreciate all of you out there who participated in that. I'm going to talk sports on today's show. We've got big guests. We're going to talk to a couple of guests on today's show that are, I think, really worth paying attention and listening to. One of them, a former insider in the Comcast family, will be joining us at 12:30 to talk about time spent behind the doors at Comcast. What is it like to cover a team when you know you're in a partnership with that team? It's tricky. It's a tricky landscape. It's one that I have seen firsthand, secondhand, thirdhand, observed. I have the unique vantage point in media of sitting in a position where I am the lead sports columnist at the Oregonian. I have been since 2002. I love writing. I love the fact that I'm a writer first and foremost. I say that to people. I love the written word. I'm an English literature major. I really enjoy what I do as a sports columnist. But I also have the vantage point of being in electronic media during a time in which everything is shifting, if you really think about it. I'm at KGW as an employee at KGW. I work mostly Sunday nights. I appear on other shows and other parts of the station. But when something's happening in sports, I hit KGW, and I'm there. And I love being with a blue-chip news entity like KGW. And then I am on this radio show and have been on this radio show for 10 years now. So I have seen the changes in the newspaper industry. I've seen the changes in radio. I've seen the changes in TV. I've seen the changes in corporate sports. And I'm not picking on anybody today in particular, because I know that everybody wants to make this about, hey, you're picking on Comcast or whatever. I don't want to do that. What I want to do is talk about the challenge of trying to cover a team when you know that that team is looking over your shoulder and considers you a PR arm of the team. And make no mistake, Comcast Sportsnet Northwest and the Trailblazers are in an arrangement that is mutually beneficial. The team pays a lot of money, and has a high-profile, high-powered contract, and the news entity is in a deep relationship. Neil Olshey, the Blazers general manager, he keeps a file of everything negative that any Comcast employee says about him, and that file is brought over and opened up several times a year, and they talk about things. We've seen people in this market lose their jobs for things they've said. We've seen broadcasters who are unable to say exactly what they think for fear of being fired. And I don't begrudge anybody who makes that decision to go to work there or work for the Blazers or work for University of Oregon or work for Oregon State. You got to eat. So I don't begrudge anybody who makes a decision to go out and go, hey, look, this is going to be my livelihood. And I know that there are certain rules I got to play by to keep that. But what I'm saying is, if I can speak to you as a reader, a listener, a viewer, I can tell you that you're going to have to be more and more careful these days as colleges, professional teams, minor league teams, radio stations, television networks, regional networks and newspapers. It becomes a more tricky and complex landscape when there are deals made that are big time business deals. That maybe it's not in the best interest of the Blazers if somebody's going on television and reporting the accurate, unfiltered truth about an entity. And this goes way back. I think we can go back to Ted Turner and TBS buying a network, changing the name of the station, rolling that out to cover his Atlanta Braves. I had no idea that Ted Turner, when I was a kid, and TBS were in cahoots together. No idea. I just turned it on. It was the greatest thing ever. I could see baseball whenever. WGN with the Cubs. There was a time in which people were wondering, can the Tribune accurately cover the Cubs, given that the entity that owns the Cubs also owns the newspaper? Even this radio show, in its infancy, I had a brush with it myself. This is why I'm not saying, hey, it's you and you and you who have sold out. I'm just saying, as a reader, listener, viewer, you have to be more discerning and more aware of where your news is coming from and the motivation behind it. And when you see a report that says that the Portland Trail Blazers made a better offer to the Indiana Pacers than Oklahoma City did for Paul George, immediately I went, oh, that's a Neil Olshey talking point. And you're going to have to do that. And many of you already do, but there are some out there who still quite aren't savvy to what's going on behind the scenes and the fake news that they're getting out there. And fake news does exist. 503-417-7575 is the number. Let me tell you about my personal experience with it. When this show started, there was no way in hell Paul Allen wanted me on the radio. And yet he owned, at that time, Rose City Radio. And yet Rose City Radio gave me, kind of under the cover of night, the very first radio show that was a full-time show that I hosted. They stuck me on KXL. They put me on 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. They brought me in through the cover of night. Paul Allen owned the station. And the executives with the Blazers at that time told him, it's not a big deal. It's good for us to have a guy who's telling the truth out there. It makes us look like, hey, we're going to get caught doing the right thing. We're not going to be self-conscious about it. But I knew taking that job that I had to protect myself. It's why I sought out clauses in my contract that said, hey, management is not allowed to steer the editorial content of the radio show. Management is not allowed to communicate. The Blazers are not allowed to communicate with me on the content of the radio show. All that stuff was spelled out, and I got to tell you, still, I could feel the pressure. And there were times when management at that station said, hey, come on, Canzano, make it easy on us. You're just taking shots to take shots now. Maybe I was a little naive. But I'm telling you, it exists, and it existed, and I was so happy when Allen sold the radio station, because it wasn't because I was going to change my messaging, but the appearance of that conflict of interest was bad enough. And feeling that pressure overhead, it's real. And coming up, you're going to hear from somebody who's been on the other side of this, who's going to tell you it's real. It's a real thing. It's a reality. Chris McGowan, the Blazers president. Last year, last season, when an employee was let go for being critical of Neil Olshey, Chris McGowan, the Blazers president, I talked to him about that arrangement with Comcast Sportsnet Northwest. He told me we very much view that as a business partnership. And I said to him, look, at different times I've talked to Comcast about would I ever work there. I've talked to them about development of a TV show. I've talked to them about would I ever go to work there. And ultimately, what always stops me is the idea that I don't think I'd last a day there. Saying and doing the kinds of things that I do on this show and in print, I don't think I'd last a day. And nor do I think that Comcast would ever be allowed to hire me, because I think they'd have to run that by the Blazers. So that's what you're dealing with. That is hanging overhead, and that is a tough thing to deal with. And again, I do not begrudge the journalists who have migrated that way any more than I would begrudge Rob Mosley, who left the Eugene Register Guard to go to work for the Oregon Ducks. He does a good job working for the Oregon Ducks, writing stories that they're okay with him writing. He does a really good job at it. He's a talented journalist. He's working on the marketing side of things, sure. But he's a talented journalist trying to feed his family. I don't begrudge him that. And I've told him that several times. There are varying degrees of selling out. And I'm not going to sit back and tell somebody how to feed their family. But I do want to tell you that you've got to be careful when you are disseminating information that is coming from a partner, and it's, and in particular, a television partner that of a network that is created solely to shill for the organization. That is a tough spot to operate in as a journalist. And you'd have to, in that case, simply say, hey, it's my job to write human interest stories. Keep it happy. It's not my job to be critical of, you know, employees, the team, whatever. And that's fine, as long as the reader, listener, viewer is in that arrangement with you. I have no problem with that. But I think some of you out there, you operate with like the idea that if you get a GoDucks.com story, that you're getting unfiltered critical journalism. You're not. You're getting probably a nice human interest story written by a gifted writer. And I use Rob Mosley as an example because I like Rob, I like his work, but I think it's an extreme example of somebody who left the newspaper world to go to work for a university or a sports team. And it's not unique to the University of Oregon. It's happening across sports. The Blazers would love you to read content only on their website. They want the traffic. And they like the propaganda angle of it. And you know what? If I were them, I would like it too. That's how I would operate if I were them. But I'm not. I'm over here on an island. I'm saying what I think. I've carved out this island and put it together in a way that I'm comfortable with. I like the platforms that I have. I like that I'm diverse across all media. I like the fact that nobody in the market is getting more eyeballs, ears, and whatever else you listen to or watch than this radio show is getting. So I appreciate you for listening. And up next, you're going to hear not just about the NBA, but you're going to hear what it is like to operate with a very real news partner hanging over your shoulder. An insider will join us to break that all down. Later in the show, if you've seen Bull Durham, the movie, you're going to want to be here. Special guest coming up later in the program. You're listening to the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show on the BFT Radio Network.
Here's John Canzano with the Bald-Faced Truth.
I don't know if you have kids. We got a bunch of kids living at our house. Four of them, to be exact. And the three-year-old every morning, I guess I have to thank Disney's for this. The three-year-old each morning wakes up and her first thought is like wearing a princess dress, like which dress to wear. I'm not sure that this is helping Disney. But it's like I literally am ordered around each morning by Elsa or Moana or Ariel, or depending on which dress she wants to wear. And if you are a parent out there who's got a kid who's like seven or under, you're probably dealing with some form of this. And then we have neighbors who give us these dresses because their kids outgrow them. I think that it's headed in a healthy place. But it doesn't feel healthy when the three-year-old's saying, hey, I want to be Elsa, like from the moment she's up. So I'm dealing with Elsa all morning. But thank you, Disney, for that. Did anybody attend the Marcus Mariota autograph session yesterday? Did you do that? Did you see him? Did you shake his hand? Did you get an autograph? How did it go? I'm curious to know. I know he didn't hold a media availability in conjunction with it. I think that if you are somebody who is big on Marcus Mariota, it probably made your day. I think that if you are somebody who is a Duck fan, it probably made your day. So there's that. Tell me how that went at 503-417-7575 if you are into that. We'll take some phone calls. We'll get to our Blazers insider to talk some NBA coming up. Mike in Vancouver. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, John. Good to hear your voice. As a former photojournalist for 20 years, being a real pure photojournalist, or any type of journalist, a reporter, or whatever, it's exhausting.
Yeah.
It's exhausting to actually lay the truth out there, and you never get rewarded for it. You just get punished. And the reality is most people, most journalists end up leaving that whole career and end up going to, maybe you know this as well as I, they end up going to PR firms and advertising firms because they're tired of working too hard and breaking everybody's hearts. So it's just one of those things where, I mean, your heart has to really be in it to tell the truth. And it's just sometimes it's not very fun.
And I also think, like, I don't begrudge anybody who leaves journalism to go to work at a PR firm or work for a university or work for a team. Like, there are a lot of smart, competent, good people who are working in those jobs. I just think that as a reader, listener, viewer, my whole point, my larger point, which I think is a reasonable one, is that you've got to be more discerning. You've got to be more aware. Because it is a lot clouded. I think we learned it in the presidential election, like watching the coverage of the presidential election. And I'm not taking one side or the other in that debate. But you have to be aware of where you're getting your information. Our next guest comes to us from ESPN. NBA reporter Chris Haynes joining us. How are you, Haynes?
John, I'm doing good. How about yourself, man?
I'm doing well. Let's talk some NBA, and then I got some questions for you about journalism later, but let's talk NBA. Are you surprised by what you're seeing this summer in the NBA?
How about here? Yeah, that's pretty. You know, this is what, my 6th or 7th year covering the league. I haven't seen this type of movement, and where the movement is basically determined by what Golden State and Kevin Durant, what they're doing over there. That's why Houston is making this move. That's why OKC is making this move. That's why Boston is trying to, you know, to boost in their firepower. Man, it's kind of ridiculous. It's like a one-team league right now. Everybody's trying to maneuver to put themselves in position to give themselves a better shot at that squad. And so it's flurry like anything I've seen before that squad covering this league.
You had, obviously, the Gordon Hayward thing. You were way out in front of that. And I know you took some grief because you reported it, and then people were saying, Chris, like, they're saying a deal's not done, and then it comes true. Pretty satisfying when you know something's going to happen, you report it, and it comes true, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It was just a matter of when they were going to put their Tribune essay out, man. I was comfortable with my sources, people that I trusted. And, you know, man, let that be a lesson to any up-and-coming reporters out there who want to get in this field, man. You develop your sources. You try to infiltrate certain circles. And you stand by your reporter, no matter what anybody's saying out there. So that's what I did. And at the end of the day, you know, I felt pretty good about what I did.
We're talking to Chris Haynes, ESPN NBA reporter. We're watching a league that has James Harden now making more money than Steph Curry. Where is it all headed?
That's the NBA money. That's the new revenue NBA money. I mean, you got a lot of former players pissed just about you know, you got the average Joe in the NBA making upwards of $20 million a season. And it's crazy, like, but at the same time, John, like, there's still some players that still getting some big money. I mean, nobody saw Tim Hardaway, you know, come up with that salary at New York gave him. But this year, like last year, players who weren't free agents, they looked at what Evan Turner got, what Allen Crabb got. It was like, okay, we're going to cash out next summer. And that hasn't been the case. The market has been kind of dry. You got, you know, Iguodala, he was only able to get around $15 mil. I mean, I know that's good for a 33-year-old, but if you're looking at Evan Turner, Allen Crabb, and guys like that, looking at Kent Bazemore, you would have thought he was going to get in the 20s easy. And so it's kind of – the numbers have been kind of conflicted, and there's a lot of players who are just pissed about the fact that they feel like maybe their agents aren't doing a good job. But it's just like I think teams are getting smart. Like Kyle Lowry, he wanted 4 years. And last year or maybe 2 years ago, he would have gotten 4 years. But teams aren't willing to just give a 4-year deal now, you know, because they understand at the back end of that contract, it may come back to bite them. So I don't know. It seemed like it was kind of balanced this summer, but, you know, we'll see. I think I need to see more. I need to see more years to make a final determination on where it's all headed.
Hey, ESPN's Chris Haynes is with us. I'm looking at the team payrolls. The Blazers at $134 million have the highest payroll in the NBA and a lot of bad contracts. How do the Blazers get out of that mess?
Man, they got to find a team to dump some salary. Like, it's going to have to be, I would think, in a three-team scenario where they may get a promising guy back, but they're shipping out two players such as maybe Myles Leonard or Mo Harkless or somebody like that to a team who has cap space and is willing to take on that salary for a pick. So it's going to have to be that type of scenario to occur. I don't think they'll be able to just get rid of a team, you know. I mean, get rid of those players by just doing a one-on-one trade. It's going to be tough, man, because, you know, a lot of those players, man, you said it right there, they're not producing up to the salary level that they're receiving right now. So it's going to be difficult for them to get that done.
I know you love the NBA, and I know that you cover it. When you look across the league, I see places like Portland, Milwaukee, Charlotte, Memphis, Orlando, and I go Utah, and I say, okay, how can these teams compete? Help me out with this. What can Adam Silver do to make everybody feel like they have a chance?
You know, they thought implementing this new, supermax into the CBA, they thought that was going to help teams at least retain their star players, but we're seeing that having the opposite effect. The likes of, it's not the same situation, but Gordon Hayward, Bolton, and Paul George getting out. And I don't know, man. I think it's always going to be an imbalance. Players want to play in big markets. They want to play with other great players now. Like, you look at Kevin Durant and what he did, his move he's made. Now, I'm just assuming, I haven't talked to him about this in particular, but players are thinking about their legacy even more. You know, they look at all the documentaries about Charles Barkley, Karl Malone, Patrick Ewing, you know, all the guys who haven't won championships. And they were great players. They were great players, but they're still a stain. And so nowadays, players are doing that. They're willing to do whatever it takes to get that championship, and, you know, if that means joining a team that's already stacked or whatever. So I can't say players don't want to win like they used to, but it's just they're willing to go extra leaps and bounds to get that title. And to go back to your question, I don't know the answer. I don't know, because, you know, really, do players just gravitate to Milwaukee? Do they gravitate to Salt Lake City? Do they gravitate to Portland? History says no. So, I mean, I don't know the answer to that, John.
Are the players more motivated, in your opinion, by the money, or is there so much money that it becomes about winning and playing time because they know they're going to get the money anyway somewhere?
That's a good question. I think initially, first 7-8 years of a player's tenure in the league, they want to capitalize and get as much money as possible. And then I think around that 8th year, if they haven't yet received, haven't yet secured a title, that's when they start looking elsewhere. That's when they start looking elsewhere. Like Dame. Dame is Portland through and through. Like, he's went out there and said he's not joining a super team. He's not doing that. He's not doing this. But I want to wait. I want to wait a couple years to see if he continues to have playoff exits or maybe some seasons not even making the playoffs, if he still has that tune. People grow up. Players grow up. They have different tastes. And so that's just the way it is. I think players still want to win, John. I still players still want to win, but I think, as you can see with a lot of star players, once they start seeing that, man, that window is closing, they'll pretty much do what it takes to join or put themselves in position to be on a championship contending team.
Our guest is Chris Haynes of ESPN. He covers the NBA. Chris, when I brought you on, I was talking about journalism and partnerships that teams have with news entities. When you've got a TV partner that is in a partnership with a team, of course, the team is thinking, hey, we're getting favorable coverage. You worked at Comcast Sportsnet Northwest. Is that real with the team looking over your shoulder? Is that a real thing that you're aware of when you're working there?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a real thing. It's not to the point where, how can I say this? It's not to the point where I'm mute, like they put me mute, but it is. That's the team partner. They have a relationship. And so, I couldn't write whatever I wanted to write, like I did when I left to the Cleveland Plain Dealer or what I'm doing at ESPN. So, it's something that, you look at everybody. I mean, just look across the country at the TV partners and look at their beat guys. And you just judge them. You judge them how what they're writing about the team, how the favorable coverage is. And, I mean, that's part of it. That's part of it. I don't think that makes that reporter any less of a reporter, but that's reality.
That's what I say is, like, I don't begrudge people for making a living and working where they need to work. And you, obviously, you came up and that was the job that was available to you. You take it. But it must have felt different to you or better when you leave Comcast Sportsnet Northwest and you go to the Cleveland Plain Dealer, where, like, you don't have the GM of the team meeting with your boss going, hey, this was too critical or whatever was said back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, Like I said, John, that stuff goes on, everywhere. That stuff goes on. It happens. It's part of it. And you got to deal with it, and you make the best of it. You try to provide coverage to the fans as best you can under the circumstances. But, it's there.
All right.
At the end of the day, it's there.
Chris, I really appreciate your time. You've got kids, right? You've got a bunch of kids at your house like I do.
Yeah, I got a basketball team.
How many girls?
4 girls.
Okay. All right. We're talking the same language now. I've got 3. All right. You have an issue with Disney princess dresses at morning time when kids are getting dressed, or the 3-year-old wants a different princess dress every day, and I'm not sure this is healthy.
Oh, no, I haven't really had that problem, John.
Cinderella, Ariel, it's
yeah, they got, my girls got that. They've had that. It got to a point where I forgot, Princess Tiana.
Princess and the Frog. Yeah, the Frog.
It got to the point where my daughters, they went to school, they had to have it on. So we just put their regular school clothes over that. And so we kind of compromise that way. At that point, there's nothing you can do. You got to let them sleep in and take a bath in and do whatever. They'll grow out of it soon.
Chris Haynes, you're the best. I appreciate you, man.
Take care, JC.
All right. There he is, now with ESPN as an NBA reporter. That's the reality. And it's existing, and it's, I think this, if anything positive has come out of the last presidential election news cycle, it has been the realization, I think, from a lot of people that when you're watching whatever network you're watching, and again, I'm not picking a side here, I'm not saying I agree or disagree with this or that, but the realization that you have to consider the source of the news, the information, kind of, you know, I'm not telling you not to read it. I'm not telling you not to think about it. I'm not telling you not to examine it. Do what you want to do. I love that there's content available for you in many different places. But what I am going to tell you is you have to look at where it's coming from and read it through that lens, or disseminate that information through that lens. If it's coming from the news partner, the team, or it's the actual broadcast that the broadcaster's on the payroll of the team, you've got to go, okay, this is the information I'm getting, and this is the filter in which it's coming through. And I agree with Chris that it's not like, it doesn't mean that that's a bad person. Like, some of my good friends are in PR, working for teams, working for organizations, and, you know, bless them. There are job people need to feed their families. They need to, you know, have a career. You know, I used to have people get mad at me. They get mad at me when I first made that transition from just being a sports columnist and just being in the print world. And I was a little ahead of the curve, moving to electronic media and on the radio. People got mad because there was like, well, why, you're not a broadcaster. Why are you getting the contract? I had that conversation with an established broadcaster who was like upset at me that a radio station wanted to give me a show. And I was on an airplane. And the guy and I were having, it wasn't like a bad disagreement. We were having a discussion about it. And he was like, I don't understand why you got this long-term contract. I'm the broadcaster. And this guy that was listening over, eavesdropping on the conversation, leaned across the aisle and he said, excuse me. He said, I can't help but overhear this. And I'm wondering, why would you begrudge him for getting what he's getting? I've always had that mentality. I've worked with a lot of different personalities in a lot of different markets, and media entities are weird entities. You got to be a different animal to be good in media and to cover teams and to immerse yourself in it and to love it the way that a lot of the media members love it. You got to be a different animal. And I have never looked over at anybody else and thought, oh, why are they getting what I'm not? But that happens. It happens a lot. It happens frequently. It happens to me. It's happened to, I've watched other people do it to other coworkers. And I'm always like, man, carve your own way. Figure out what you want to be as a journalist. Figure out who you want to be as a commentator, radio host, whatever it is that you want to be, go be it. But my message, the larger point would be to people who are disseminating information, you got to look at where you're getting it from. Because if you don't, you're not getting the full picture. All right, coming up, we've got, if you love Bull Durham, if that's a movie that you love, I have a special thing coming up for you at 2 o'clock. You know the guy who is hitting when Crash Davis says, Charlie, when you speak of me kindly? And he, because Nuke shakes off Crash Davis. Paul Devlin. He's a Boston Red Sox minor leaguer. He's a former minor leaguer. He's the guy who took Nuke deep in Bull Durham, and he has made a life out of being that guy after the movie. I love this guest coming up at 2 o'clock. Gliss did a great job tracking him down, but he found the guy that took Nuke deep, and that guy probably never pays for a drink. He goes into the bar, and everybody's like, hey, that's the guy who took Nuke deep. He's coming up at 2 o'clock. Plus, all the news and sound from all around sports, the best news and sound, that's going to be part of our next segment. You might be listening in Portland on 102.9 or 750 The Game. You might be listening on Fox Sports Eugene. I appreciate you, but you got the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Network.
Something is about to happen.
BFT.
Now listen up, everyone.
Let's go. The Bald-Faced Truth.
John Canzano.
I gotta say, I love him most of the time. I think he's right on.
He's okay.
John's great.
He's a little unusual.
Live every afternoon, 12 to 3 p.m.
I hate that guy because he just never knows what he's talking about.
I think he does a damn good job.
That's my dude, man. Yeah, I know him, man. I let my mother listen to him.
Now, From the Pac West Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
John's Waterproofing, great company. Whether you're listening to this show on 102.9 or 750 The Game in Portland or down in Eugene on Fox Sports Eugene, 95.7 FM and 1050 AM, you're listening on the BFT Radio Network, but you're also listening in an area that John's Waterproofing services. Look, I've used John's Waterproofing. If you've got an issue with your basement, with water, with a funny smell, mold, mildew, we put a basement system in a home that we own that encapsulated the crawl space, changed the house, changed the smell, changed the air quality, the investment is protected. They serve the greater Portland area, Salem, Beaverton, Eugene, Portland, Vancouver. John's Waterproofing. It's a great company. They're the local experts for waterproofing, basement finishing, mold problems, crawl space repair. I've used them. I swear by them. John's Waterproofing is a great company. Go to bettercrawlspaces.com to get information or call them at 877-526-8141. That's 877-526-8141. You can get a free estimate. Tell them Canzano sent you. Let's play.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth headquarters. Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Trailblazers trailed the Boston Celtics yesterday at Bummer League, 11-0 to start the game. Celtics went on to a 70-64 win that was less than thrilling. One of the bright spots was Caleb Swanigan. I like Swanigan's game. But Terry Stotts, Blazers coach, gave his impressions of both his rookies, Zach Collins and Caleb Swanigan. Punch it.
You know, I like the way they both compete, first and foremost. When we drafted them, they have a really good work ethic. They compete at both ends of the floor. They're good kids. I'm impressed with their basketball IQ. They pick things up pretty quickly.
A lot of glowing praise from Terry Stotts. And that's his job. That's what he should do. But here's the bottom line. I like Zach Collins. I think ultimately Zach Collins will be the better of the two players. But Caleb Swanigan's going to have the better rookie season. He's more NBA ready. His game translates better. He's an energy guy. He's got everyone wants to go Draymond Green with him. I feel a little more Brian Grant in his game. Rebounder, will work hard. That is a guy that I think a lot of people are going to root for. Zach Collins was 1-for-7 in the game. He struggled, and he talked about it. Punch it.
It's frustrating. You know, I don't feel like I'm offensively playing as well as I could be, and the ball's not going in right now, but just got to keep going at it.
He's a good athlete. He has a good feel for the game. I like his upside, but again, let's remember, he's 19. I think it's going to be a little while before Zach Collins is a polished player. And I said it after the draft, I like him at that position. I think he's going to make me look bad before he makes me look good. But I think in the end, I like my chances. During the Summer League broadcast on NBA TV, Mark Cuban said what no owner ever says. He says, we're rebuilding. He talked about why they decided to rebuild. Punch it.
How would you term where the Mavericks are at right now?
We're rebuilding, right? And there's no question about it. And you know, if we were in the East, we would not be rebuilding. We'd be handling things completely different. I think I'm going to kidnap Adam Silver and not let him out until he moves us to the Eastern Conference. But, given where we are, given where the Warriors are and what's happening in the Western Conference, it kind of, you know, sealed what we have to do.
I really like Mark Cuban. He speaks his mind. He doesn't worry what people think of him. I think everybody gets caught up in that. And he's being real there. What the Warriors are doing and what some other teams in the Western Conference are doing trying to stay with the Warriors, it's got to be awfully discouraging for a franchise like the Dallas Mavericks, not to mention discouraging for the franchises like Utah, Portland, and some others who are just trying to become relevant. They're in a rebuild, and I like that he says so. Nobody ever says that. Why are people so afraid to say we're rebuilding? It's like NBA owners are standing in front of their house and their house has been blown down and they're like, no, we're just we're in a youth movement. No. We're just trying. We're staying in the arms race. Cuban's got rubble behind him, and he's like, we're rebuilding. And guess what? If we were in the East, we wouldn't be. We'd be trying to win right now. Tennessee Titans are hot in the NFL power rankings, trending upwards. Field Yates of ESPN explains why the Titans are trending upward. Punch it.
Two teams cracked the top 10 on the rise in this latest ranking.
Yeah, very much on the rise with the Tennessee Titans, and we begin at number 9 because, of course, the quarterback is in place on top of the overall organizational structure. But Marcus Mariota showed plenty of promise during his second season. Now, needs to be better overall with his decision-making, and we'll see if Tennessee eventually unleashes him more as a runner. But the offensive line is there, the running backs are there, and it looks like the wide receiving core is there now as well.
I don't want to see him as a runner first, but he's got good feet. And who doesn't love Marcus Mariota's game? Such a class guy. I just saw so much from him in his time at Oregon, and I just got as a media member, you just get a scratch the surface look at guys. But what a classy, genuine individual that Marcus Mariota is. He makes an appearance yesterday in Portland, and it surprised a lot of media members that Marcus decided he wasn't going to do any interviews because he's very accessible, and people who listen to this show know that he comes on twice a year. Comes on in the early part of the season. He comes on late. You hear from him on this station and on this show. But he's going. He's got a charity event that's taking place in Eugene today, and he said, "I'll do an availability there." It rankled some people, but given how accessible he's been over the years, I kind of get why he didn't want to do that. He's there signing autographs for hundreds of people. It's a contractual obligation that he has made, and he's got a charity event that he'd rather have people pay attention to. So, you know what? I'll buy what he's selling there. I also am buying what the Tennessee Titans have done to get better around him. Because everybody knew that they needed offensive improvements, right? So, the Titans go out and decided, hey, look. They were 9-7 last year. That was a 6-game jump from the previous season. Their rushing offense went from 25th in the NFL to 3rd in the NFL simply by acquiring DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry. Murray had 100 yards in 5 games. He had 1,300 yards in the season. And then Henry adds 500 yards and 5 touchdowns. Better offensive line, better running game. Then they went out and they said, all right, in the draft, 3 of their first top picks were offensive players. And what Mariota needed was he needed guys to go down the field and throw the football to. He needed guys that he was going to be able to help make him look better. So I hope he's less of a runner. Jason Tatum is now a Boston Celtic. He's got a favorite player, and Boston fans probably don't want to hear who it is. How will this go over in Boston? Tatum, take it away. Punch it.
You know, you got to be politically correct sometimes. So, Kobe Bryant was my favorite player. I got drafted to the Celtics, kind of ironic, but I think Kobe can still be my favorite player.
And I love how fans are getting mad at him in Boston for saying that Kobe was his favorite player. Because what, he's supposed to have Paul Pierce or Larry Legend? It's okay for these guys to be regular people. I'm a big fan of players being people. And I'm okay that he had a life before he was he joined the Boston Celtics. So Kobe can be your guy. LeVar Ball, always in the news. He's been at Summer League watching Lonzo in a Lakers uniform. They put a mic in front of LeVar. So LeVar did what LeVar does. By the way, Lonzo, 11 points, 11 rebounds, 11 assists, triple-double. Here's LeVar. Punch it.
I'm going to show you what he did, dude. Look how many Laker fans out here.
Yeah.
Changed the culture.
Yeah.
That's what it's about. It ain't about him being a superstar. It's about him changing the culture. Instead of going to the movies, everybody coming to watch the Lakers. And
Instead of going to the movies, everybody's coming to watch the Lakers. LeVar Ball is going to be a talking point this season. But you know what? If you're a Laker fan, if you're not excited by watching what Lonzo Ball has done in Summer League, and I get it's Summer League. We're talking about a guy who should dominate in Summer League. I would expect the top two or three picks in Summer League to have, you know, I remember Jared Bayless being a Summer League MVP. In fact, blast from the past. You got to dominate if you're LeVar or Lonzo in that situation. And I don't know if I'm ever going to get over LeVar. Andrew McCutchen and the Pirates were at Wrigley yesterday. Big first inning. Did you hear about this? Punch it.
You're listening to Mice. This pitch is high in the air to left center field. Wind is carrying it toward the wall. And this one is gone. Andrew McCutchen goes back to back, his 17th. And listen to this beautiful sound at Wrigley. Listen to these boobirds.
There it was. Andrew McCutchen and the Pirates in a 14-3 win. That home run gave the Pirates, in the top of the first inning, Cubs hadn't even batted, a 10-0 lead. By the way, I played in a college game where we had an 18-1 lead and lost. Yeah. Kind of an exciting game. A guy named Joe was on Jeopardy over the weekend, and apparently he's not a big hockey fan. Punch it.
100-plus assists in an NHL season has been accomplished only 13 times. 11 times by this player. Joe.
Who's Magic Johnson?
Oh, no. Diane?
Who's Wayne Gretzky?
Wayne Gretzky. We're talking about hockey, not the NBA.
I don't know why I find that so amusing. Maybe it was the pressure. All you do is you hear assists and 100 times. Listen again. Poor Joe. I wish you could see his face.
100-plus assists in an NHL season has been accomplished only 13 times. 11 times by this player. Joe.
Who's Magic Johnson?
Oh, no. Diane?
Who's Wayne Gretzky?
Wayne Gretzky. We're talking about hockey, not the NBA.
You idiot! How does Alex not lose it there? I love that moment where Alex is like, oh, no. From about right here.
11 times by this player. Joe.
Who's Magic Johnson?
Oh, no.
It's that moment of...
Oh, no.
No. That's headed to YouTube. That's what that oh, no says. From that...
Who's Magic Johnson?
Oh, no.
Basically, you're going to be viral. Basically, some radio show host middays in the state of Oregon is going to be replaying your voice, Joe, making that faux pas. And look, I make mistakes all the time. Maybe the guy does know the NHL. You see people like, you know, when they have, you know, like when they have the Miss America or Miss USA pageant or whatever, and they go to the Q&A, and the lady doesn't know on the map where, like, Des Moines is or California. Or I just want to help the children over and over again, not making any sense. I always, instead of saying, that person's not very bright, I always want to go, man, when those bright lights are on, sometimes you lose all common sense. You know?
By this player, Joe.
Who's Magic Johnson?
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Diane?
Who's Wayne Gretzky?
Wayne Gretzky. We're talking about hockey, not the NBA.
You idiot. We should do a Jeopardy thing. You know what would be interesting? Like, I think... Like, Gliss, I think you're a smart guy. You're a smart guy. You're a producer of the show. I mean, come on. You're the brains of this show. You are a bad speller. You're more of a phonetic speller.
You've brought this up before a couple times.
I think we should get a kid in here who's like eighth grade, spelling bee champion, that would like be like the girl who won the spelling bee.
Yeah, he would light me up probably.
Boom. Be really interesting. What do you think that's about? You think he didn't know he heard assists and went to the biggest name basketball player he could think of? Or does he just not know?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, but that's the thing is, I kind of feel like it was just like, you know, a brain fart, because you got to know that Magic Johnson does not play hockey, right?
Well, he knows now. Here's another Jeopardy faux pas. We can drop the music down because this really isn't Punch-It related, but here's another Jeopardy faux pas.
In 1884, Maud Watson won the first women's singles tennis competition at this British venue. Reed.
What is Wimbledon?
Yes.
Presidential artifacts for 800, please.
Answer. Daily double. And before I ask you to make a wager, we have to take some money away from you, Reed. I'm informed that you very clearly said Wimbledon, not Wimbledon, a few moments ago. So you're losing $800, which means you now have 200, but you can still risk up to 1,000.
I think he should throw like a John McEnroe-like tantrum there. Like, I would accept Wimbledon with... instead of Wimbledon.
You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious. That ball was on the line. Chalk flew up. It was clearly it. How can you possibly call that out? That he's walking over. Everyone knows it's in this whole stadium. And you call it out?
Well, you cannot be serious. Wimbledon? How about this faux pas as well?
In life for 400, please.
In common law, the age of this, signaling adulthood, is presumed to be 14 in boys and 12 in girls. Tom?
What is the age of consent?
No.
Oh. Sorry. Is that the same guy? Like, just the horrified look on Alex's face for that one. What is the age of consent? Do you know what the correct answer is to that, by the way? To that question, let's put it up to our board operator, Curtis Rogers, and Gliss. I'm going to let Alex take it away, and then you answer.
In life for 400, please.
In common law, the age of this, signaling adulthood, is presumed to be 14 in boys and 12 in girls.
Gliss.
What is marriage?
Curtis?
What is puberty?
Is that right?
I'm guessing.
See,
so.
That's where I went first, actually. But then the aid, you know, by law is what kind of threw me off there.
Yeah,
I was like, well, that's not a law that you have to go through puberty at 14.
Puberty is correct.
Wow.
Although
there you go.
Although it varies among individuals.
Yeah. Okay.
So that must be that. Does that mean that you're old enough to get married? Is that what they're saying? Like the in common law?
Yeah, that's again. That's what threw me because my initial reaction was also puberty. But then when they said by law, I was kind of threw me off.
Okay, common law basically says that you've attained the legal age of puberty, which could contract a valid marriage. So there it is. The legal age of puberty is 14 for males and 12 for females in common law, and that's way too young to get married. If you are either, okay? But I love the horrified reaction.
In life for 400, please.
In common law, the age of this, signaling adulthood, is presumed to be 14 in boys and 12 in girls. Tom?
What is the age of consent?
No.
No. No. The age of consent is not 12. Or 14, for that matter.
It's bad enough to have it be 14, but then to assume that for girls it's 12 is like takes it to another level.
It's next level. And again, I don't want to go to like the contestant is a bad human being. I want to attribute, or dumb, I want to attribute that to you're on Jeopardy. There's a live audience. It's Alex Trebek right in front of you. And... the lights are on you, the timer, you got to punch in, you're on your feet, and they're asking you about things that are out in left field.
In 1884, Maud Watson won the first women's singles tennis competition at this British venue. Reed.
What is Wimbledon?
Yes.
Presidential artifacts for 800, please.
Answer. Daily double. And before I ask you to make a wager, we have to take some money away from you, Reed. I'm informed that you very clearly said Wimbledon, not Wimbledon, a few moments ago. So
boom, you lose your money.
Rafael Nadal was...
That's it.
Power in this game, you're never working on a court again. You understand me? You're pathetic, you know that? You are the worst umpire that I've ever seen in my life. You're never going to work another match if I've
John McEnroe would have had choice words. I'm going to play a game coming up. I want you to tell me something that you've done that no other listener of this show or no other caller who calls in would say that they have also done. Like, give me something that doesn't have to be your greatest achievement in life, but call and tell me something you've done that you would bet nobody else who calls in says that they've done. 503-417-7575.
More with John Canzano.
All right, in a moment, I'm going to tell you something that I've done that I don't think anyone else who calls into this show has done. I want you to try to do that as well. For example, I've told the story before. I've castrated a pig. I don't think anybody else who calls into the show during this segment is going to say, hey, I've also castrated a pig. Tell me what you have done that nobody else has done. Did you slow dance with Brad Pitt and slip him your number? Did Matthew McConaughey clean vomit out of your hair in college? Did you play golf with Tiger Woods? Were you a contestant on Wheel of Fortune? What have you done that nobody else who calls in during this next segment of radio has ever done? 503-417-7575. If you're listening on the BFT Radio Network in Eugene, on Fox Sports Eugene, or in Portland, I want to hear from you. Again, what have you done that nobody else has done? Let's go to John, who's in Cornelius. John, what have you done that nobody else who calls in has done?
I sang in the largest choir festival in the world, a choir of 30,000, sang for an audience of 120,000 in Eastern Europe.
Wow. Were you nervous?
No. When the crowd's that big, you can't pick out individual faces, so that's not much different than singing for a few hundred.
What does that sound like when you have that many people singing together?
And like no other sound I've ever heard before. It's like a wall of sound. It's constant, and it's so loud that you can feel the rattling of the music in your chest, even if you stop singing.
I love that. And my temptation would be not to sing, just to mouth the words so I could listen to everybody else.
It's tempting.
Yeah. Awesome. Thanks, John, for that. That's John and Cornelius, who is sang in a choir of 100,000-plus people. What have you done that nobody else has done? Come on. Play the game. 503-417-7575. Rick's in Salem. Rick, tell me something you've done that nobody else who calls in has done.
Well, first of all, John, before I get to mine, I'll have to say that I, too, have castrated a pig.
Damn it.
All right. Mine is I have kicked not only a 52-yard field goal in my life, but I've done it barefoot.
You kicked a barefoot 52-yard field goal. Where were you?
I was at Cascade High School, and my coach tried to petition for me to kick barefoot, but OSAA rules would say no.
Why were you a better kicker barefoot than with a cleat on?
If you tell me that, we'll both know. Well, I think it's because I got more of my bone into the ball, and that just gave it more punch, is my guess. But
I think it's because you castrated pigs, and you're a tough SOB for doing so.
High school, we're country strength out there.
Yeah, you've seen some stuff, basically. That's Rick in Salem. What have you done that nobody else has done? Give me one thing that you have done that nobody else has done. Mag is in West Lynn. Mag, tell me what you've done.
I've taken a skateboard ride from government camp down to Rhododendron. It took me about 12 minutes, and I got to ride back up and did the exact same thing again.
You were at government camp on a skateboard.
Yep.
How long does that take you to get down from government camp?
It was, I don't know, 10 or 12, 15 minutes. I kind of sort of fell off of it a couple of times, and not hurting myself, but ran off of it, I should say, a couple of times. And then on the first voyage, and then the second voyage, I made it all the way down without stopping.
I'd have to have elbow pads, a helmet. Love that. Mag has gone down from government camp. Tell me what you've done that nobody else who calls in has done. Eric's in Portland. Eric, go ahead.
Yeah, 1972, 73, on my 12th birthday, Blazer game, courtside, the defending champion Knicks in town, my hero, Walt Frazier, took the ball out right in front of me, and I reached out and smacked him on the ass and said, "Come get him, Walt."
I love it. Eric.
Yeah, Portland beat him soundly.
Eric gave Walt Frazier a little pat on the backside. I love that. What have you done that nobody else has done? Let's go out to Steve on line four. Steve in Portland, what's up?
Hey, I was in Pacific Palisades when I lived in Los Angeles. I was going on a mountain bike trip with my buddy, and out from the bushes walked Michael Keaton. And we were just riding real slow at this point, and he asked us, he goes, hey, does any of you know how to unlock a Kryptonic lock? And he had locked his bike up and threw it in the bush to go on a hike. And he couldn't get the lock undone. So we tried to help him out for a bit. And then finally, he didn't know what he was going to do. So we said, well, we're just starting our bike ride. Let's just throw your bike in the back of my buddy's van. And we gave him a ride home. And he found out where we worked. We both worked at a restaurant in L.A., and he sent us a $100 gift certificate each to his favorite bike shop.
You helped Batman.
Yeah. And as a matter of fact, when I was trying to do the Kryptonic lock, my friend Dave said, I don't know why you can't do it. You're Batman.
I love that. He helped Batman. Gail is in McMinnville. Gail, what have you done?
I used to walk a tightrope for a job.
No way.
Not in the circus.
What is that like?
It was fun. It was a lot of fun. I was much younger, and it was at a Renaissance fair, and people had to pay money to walk across the rope to win a prize, and we had to show them how to walk on the tightrope, and we do demonstrations.
Can you still do it right now?
Oh, I've had two knee surgeries since then. I don't know.
Get yourself to Reflex that take care of you. You'll be back on that tightrope.
I know, believe me. But yeah, it was pretty cool when I did it.
I tried. That's so hard, Gail. There's like one of these rock climbing places had a tightrope that was up, and I tried to stand on it. Phenomenally hard.
It is really, really hard, but I still have pretty good balance to this day.
There's Gail in McMinnville, who's blessed with balance. One line open. 417-7575 is the number in the 503 area code. Mike in Portland. Mike, what have you done?
Hey, it's a good topic. I could give you like a top 10 list probably, but it's between getting hit by lightning when I was 11 playing golf.
What?
And, yeah.
What is that like?
Visiting family and that happened, but sports related. I guess golf is kind of sports related. Anyway, growing up, I used to be able to borrow Phil Knight's snowmobiles and go ride them around.
That's pretty cool.
A couple of friends live right below him up on Bald Peak, and would go up there and met him numerous times, and he was super nice, and he's like, yeah, bro, I could use him, go have fun.
Now, Mike, when there's lightning, like I've been at like a stadium and you're out in the open and lightning and happens and we're all running for cover. You must have an especially heightened fear when that happens.
No, actually the exact opposite. I find it fascinating and very calming, actually.
Really? What was that? Yeah. What was that like when you got struck?
I don't remember a whole ton immediately after. I woke up about 30 feet in the middle of the fairway, surrounded by burning tree chunks, and I hit a tree, went in the ground, woke up to my feet, and launched me. So, yeah, woke up to my mom just like freaking out because she happened to witness it.
Yeah, you got hit by lightning.
Made her day a little nasty.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. That guy got hit by lightning. What have you done that nobody else who calls in is going to say that they've done? Steve's in Portland. Go ahead, Steve.
Hi, John. When I was in college, I went to Yankee Stadium. I got into the press box with Mel Allen and Phil Rizzuto, pretending that I was doing a story on being a sports writer. And it was quite exciting to be up there in the press box in old Yankee Stadium.
Love that. Nobody else who calls in is going to say that. And that's why I love this topic. Scott's in Vancouver. I have two lines open. Grab him right now at 503-417-7575. Scott, what have you done?
I imitate Ethel Merman.
Okay, I want to hear it.
Okay. I don't know how good it's going to come across on the speakers here, but anyway, here we go.
There's no business like show business. There's no
business I know. Everything about it is appealing. Everything the traffic will allow. Nowhere could you get that happy feeling when you are stealing that extra bow.
How did you figure out that you could do that?
Well, I've just always done imitations ever since I was a little kid, and I just listen to people's voices, and sometimes I'm able to do it, and sometimes I'm not. So
it's phenomenal. I love that. Scott, thank you for that. Nobody else calling in is going to imitate Ethel Merman. That's why you have to come to this show, by the way. I don't think I need to say that. Truck driver Ken is in Battleground. What have you done?
Well, I might not be the only one that's done it, but as a member of a submarine crew, we dove a submarine outside Guam the 1st of November of 1978, and we did not surface until the middle of January of 1979.
Wow.
78 days continuously submerged.
What does that feel like? What does that do to you mentally?
Well, let's just say if you volunteer for submarines, you probably don't have your sea bag packed tight and what you've got ain't stenciled to begin with. So,
yeah, but see, it isn't. It's not nobody else has ever done it. It's nobody who's going to call in this segment has ever done it. What have you done that nobody else has done? I've jumped off a high dive, an Olympic platform high dive, wearing a football helmet. I bet nobody who calls in during this segment has done the same thing. I played community college football at a place that had an Olympic high dive, and we were leaving practice. Somebody said, I bet you won't jump off that thing. Put on my football helmet and jumped off it. What have you done that nobody else has done? Dre is in Portland. Dre, what have you done?
Jay, as a kid, I had the privilege of shooting jumpers with Chris Mullen.
Oh,
at the Harbor Bay Owl Club right outside of Alameda. And then the other thing was my catcher when I played Little League was Isaiah Ryder, JR.
Wow.
He was a good dude back then.
He's still a good dude. He just,
I shouldn't say that. I shouldn't say that. Jay is a good dude, man. But, you know, when you're kids, it's different, though. So
yes.
Those are two different things that I'll never forget.
Love that. That's Dre in Portland, who had brushes with celebrity. I caught passes from Jeff Garcia. I bet nobody else who calls into this show has caught a pass in a football game from Jeff Garcia. High school game, still. Brent's in Salem. Brent,
hey,
what have you done?
Well, it was a couple, but how about I worked backstage at the Oscars one year, bartending in a green room backstage at the Oscar ceremony.
What'd you see back there?
All the presenters came in and out of there. Some of the people came in and out, like Dustin Hoffman went for Rain Man that year, and he came in with his Oscar with just a stunned look on his face. And there were just, I mean, you can imagine the lineup of stars. There was your Jodie Foster one, and Jack Nicholson was there, and
wow.
Goldie Hawn, and it was just on. And Gene Hackman was standing there, and it was pretty cool. I'm not starstruck much, but it was pretty cool to see so many people there at the same time.
I love that. Thanks for sharing that, Brent in Salem. Rick's in Southeast. Rick, what have you seen?
Well, John, what I did, I worked on the St. John's Bridge when we did the refab of the bridge back in 2004 and 2005. And I climbed the main cable to the top of the cable.
Oh, man. It's not for everybody.
The top of the spires are 408 feet above sea level.
What was that part of the job, or you just wanted to do it?
That was part of the job. We rewrapped the main cables on her and replaced,
wow,
a lot of the auxiliary cables, put a new bridge deck and painted the bridge, did some seismic upgrades. It was a cool project to be on such a historical piece of Portland history.
Do you get a picture up there?
No.
You needed a picture. You got to go back up.
Before we had good cell phones, John, that was 2004.
Yeah, you had a flip phone then. Thank you for that. Joe is in Springfield listening on Fox Sports Eugene. Joe, what have you done?
Thanks for accepting my call. I was contracted at Incline Village, Lake Tahoe, back in around 1998 to board up the Ponderosa Ranch House, the Cartwright Ranch House, and because winter was coming, and they always boarded up the windows during the wintertime because the snow would get pretty high. And all the rest of the crew had left, and I was putting tools away. And I sat on the hearth of the Cartwright Ranch House with nobody else around and smoked a bowl.
Bonanza style.
Yeah, and now every time I see that show, I just laugh, you know, because I sat there with nobody else around. All the furniture was there. All the settings were there.
Well, surreal.
And I sat on the edge of the fireplace and smoked a bowl.
Bonanza style. There he is, Joe in Springfield. Brad's in Vancouver. Brad, what do you got?
Hi. Okay, when I was in college in 1968, I was a freshman at Cal State Los Angeles, and I had a recreation class that was 8 o'clock in the morning, and it was way too early for me, so I never went to class. This was one particular day I decided to go to class, and I'm sitting up there sleeping in the bleachers. It was a recreation class, and the professor was doing a demonstration with this Chinese national ping pong champion, and that, you know, he could beat anybody. He can beat anybody at any time. And I'm asleep, and then I wasn't even paying attention, and then the professor said, anybody that can beat him, I'll give an automatic A to. And I hadn't been to class in the first quarter of the quarter, in about 4 months. I hadn't been to class. And I woke right up, and I went down there and beat that guy, because when I was a kid, my father played ping pong every day, and I was very, very good. And this kid, this undefeated national ping pong champion from
China. You could have been the champ. You could have been the greatest ever. Travis is in Portland. I love that. Travis, what have you done?
Hey, John, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, so I think it was about 5 years ago, Peter Jacobson had his last Peter's party at the Reserve, and Lee Trevino was the head golf guy there. And Peter comes up to me and goes, hey, you want to look caddy for Lee? And I said, yeah, of course.
Wow.
It was awesome.
You caddied for Lee Trevino.
Yeah. It was probably one of the most memorable moments. And yeah, I've caddied for a lot of people, and it's probably one of the most memorable moments.
That's what I'm looking for. That's what this segment of radio is about. What have you done that nobody else who calls in has done? Pete's in Northwest Portland. Pete, what do you got?
Hi, John. I did not catch a pass from Jeff Garcia, but I did catch a basketball pass, the greatest outlet pass that Bill Walton ever delivered in the victory parade the day after the Blazers won this championship in 77.
Wow.
I still have the ball.
You caught that ball.
I caught that ball. I had to outleap two other guys who were right at my side in the mob on the sidewalk. Not far from what is now the Performing Arts Center, Schnitz. And managed to come down with a ball, and I hung on to that ball. And at a Blazer basketball reunion, championship reunion about 10 years ago, I met Jack Ramsey, got his autograph on that ball, and Bill Shonley, and Lionel Hollins, and Dave Twardzik, and Bobby Gross. Bill Walton was not there, unfortunately. But at least I have the memories of
now,
that ball.
Next time we get him in studio, we'll bring you down. You get it to complete the loop.
Well, you know, I left a copy of the more detailed rendition of this experience at your radio station a while back and sent you an email, too, with that.
Well, I got your number now, Pete.
Yeah,
I wrote you down. All right. Thank you for that. There's Pete. Mark's in Forest Grove. Mark, what have you done?
Hey, John, this is Mark. I got a hole-in-one on a par 4 while playing golf with Justin Myers.
I love it. You're from the tournament on Friday. You hit a hole-in-one.
Yes, sir.
For people who don't know, Mark, during the BFT Foundation Celebrity Golf Tournament on a par 4, hit the ball. Did it dogleg left? Is that what that hole does?
Yeah, hole 13.
So you hook it around the trees. And you can't find the ball, and you go up, and the ball's in the... Did you go bananas when the ball was in the cup?
I kind of lost it a little bit. Yeah, you might say that.
I love it. You always have that. You save the ball?
I saved the ball. And on the side note, I took Shooter McGavin for a horseback ride as a young man.
Shooter McGavin. I love this. I love this segment. We're going to do this. We got to do this again. Can I do one more? I'll do one more. Davis and Beaverton, you get the last one. What have you done?
Okay, so in 2001, I was in second grade. A couple of cousins and I, we played laser tag at Bullwinkle's with Scottie Pippen, Rasheed Wallace, Steve Kerr, and Detlef Schrempf. Steve Kerr came up to me in a lobby. I'm a second grader. He said, "You're going down, kid." We soundly beat them. They're all posing for photographs in the laser tag room, and they were, you know, pretty easy targets. So.
Oh, I love it. See, that's why we got to do this. Every once in a while, what have you done? Oh, tell you more about this coming up. This next guy, he's been in Bull Durham, and he took Nuke LaLoosh deep. That's what this next guest has done. Leave it right here.
So I want you all to listen up. This is important stuff, all right?
Okay. Here we go.
The bald-faced truth.
Call 503-417-7575 or 877-733-0750 or text to 64636.
Here we go in 3, 2.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
I love that last segment of radio. If you missed that, you can grab the podcast on SoundCloud or iTunes. What have you done that no one else has done? Well, our next guest, Paul Devlin, former minor league player in the Boston Red Sox organization, former sportscaster, the guy who took Nuke LaLoosh deep in Bull Durham. You remember that? Took him deep. He's joining us. Before he does that, I want to play it.
Top of the ninth, two outs, one out away from a stunning two-hit shutout for LaLoosh.
Go down, mate. Throw it up. We own these guys. Dad would love a shutout. No. He's looking for heat. Let me give him the deuce.
Oh, no, he's shaking off the suds. Big mistake.
The son of a bitch is throwing a two-hit shutout. He's shaking me off. You believe that shit? Charlie, here comes the deuce. And when you speak of me, speak well. No, serve it up.
Told him I was gonna throw a deuce, right?
Yep. Man, that ball got out of here in a hurry. You know, anything travels that far ought to have a damn stewardess on it, don't you think?
Bull Durham. Love that movie. Paul Devlin, who hit that home run, joining us now. You probably heard that enough, Paul.
Oh, I have. But that's okay, John. Anything for you, buddy.
Tell us how you ended up in the batter's box that day. The story of how you ended up hitting that home run off Nuke LaLoosh.
Well, I was just finishing up school at North Carolina. I'd used my eligibility up, and I went back for the fall to finish up to a few classes so I can graduate. And somebody said they were doing a baseball movie down in Durham, and somebody made a call over to North Carolina's baseball offices, and they asked for a couple guys, and I was one of them, and I went over there, and it just so happens to be that I was picked for that scene. There was no really rhyme or reason. I just, you know, just happened to be in the right place at the right time.
How many takes do you have to do in a scene like that to get the result that you need?
Well, I tell you what, I hit a double right-handed in another scene, and the cameras were behind Nuke. So he had to actually throw the pitch, Tim Robbins. And in that scene, I mean, he was probably the worst athlete that I've ever seen, you know, in terms of an actor trying to be an athlete. That scene took 17 pitches because he was just all over the place. He was throwing it at over my head, behind me, in the dirt. And so, you know, it took 17 tries for that, just to, you know, just to get a pitch over the plate. But that, the scene where I hit the home run, it actually took 4 takes because they used a minor league pitcher to actually throw the baseball. And the funny thing was, I actually had to hit a curveball in that scene, which you probably couldn't tell. There's no way that you could tell, but Ron Shelton, who wrote and directed the movie, you know, he's a former minor league player. He played in AAA with the Baltimore Orioles. You know, he just was so precise with everything that, you know, we had to hit a curveball. So it actually took like four takes on that, which was kind of a miracle in itself to get that scene done. So that was just 4 takes, and that was a wrap, and we all went home.
Paul Devlin is with us. He was in the movie Bull Durham. I mean, what a claim to fame that you can say, hey, I'm part of this great movie. Were you aware when they were shooting it that this was going to be a really good movie, or are you also new to filmmaking at that point that you're just doing what you're told?
Well, we had really no idea what the movie was about because it was shot in, you know, so out of sequence. You know, one day we'd shoot in Durham, one day we'd go to Greensboro, one day we'd go to Asheville, and we really didn't know what exactly the movie was about, except that it was just some hotshot picture, you know, that was coming up. There were a lot of scenes that were cut out of the movie, so, and then they also went back to Los Angeles to do, you know, a lot of the scenes. So we really didn't know what was going to be in the movie. I didn't tell anybody that I was going to be in the movie because I thought maybe that I wasn't expecting, you know, things get lost on the cutting room floor. So I didn't get my hopes up at all. And, you know, I saw the movie. I just happened to be, which is unbelievable in itself, we were playing the Durham Bulls. I think it was like June 12th. You know, later that summer, and it was on Bull Durham night. So I went out and actually hit a home run that night, and then we saw it the next day, you know, in its entirety. And I just, you know, I thought it was a really well-done movie. I thought it was pretty funny, obviously. But I never thought that it was going to be, you know, the classic that it is today or have such a cult following. It was amazing how everything came together.
Paul, what's Costner like? Because you hear all these stories about Costner, that he's aloof, that he's like the celebrity. But what is he like to work with?
I tell you what, he was really, really good. And he was just coming off, I think, 2 really good films, No Way Out and The Untouchables. And, you know, he showed up and he was a really, really, really good baseball player. You know, he could hit from both sides of the plate. And, you know, I heard about, you know, his, you know, having the actor mentality and the big actor mentality after he left. But he was so good to everybody on set. And, you know, he would take us out to dinner. He would take us out to drinks. And, it didn't matter if it was a scrub like extra like me or somebody like Susan Sarandon. He was great to everybody. And, you know, after the movie was over, he got everybody on set, I think, that worked on the movie, which was probably about 200 people. He got them, you know, Letterman jackets with, you know, Bull Durham on the back. And, you know, I can say, you know, I don't have anything to say, you know, bad about him. And I can only judge people by, you know, how they are with me. And I don't go off like what other people said. But I thought he was a great guy. He was classy. He was respectful. And he was really into, you know, not only the movie, but, you know, just baseball. And he took instruction from, you know, the other players and stuff that, you know, if you wanted to learn something about catching or something like that, he would take the time, you know, to listen and learn. So, you know, I really loved the guy and I respected the guy for what he did because, you know, he didn't have a stand-in for any scenes or anything like that. He was just I thought he was a really nice guy to work with.
We're talking to Paul Devlin, a former minor leaguer with the Boston Red Sox and a former sportscaster who took Nuke LaLoosh deep in Bull Durham. Did you get, how much, if you don't mind me asking, how much you get paid for that? And do you continue to get paid since it's shown everywhere?
Well, unfortunately, you know, see, everybody in that scene was talking except me, and I didn't have any lines. So if you say, like, yes or no, you know, you'll still get residuals, you know, from that movie. But because I didn't say anything, you know, I don't have the right to, you know, get any money later on. But, you know, for the entire month that we were there, the first 10 days were all baseball. We were just practicing the scenes and stuff like that. But from then on, it was, you know, I made about $2,000, which, you know, which was nice. I didn't really care. And it was just a great experience. And obviously, it's something that's followed me around, you know, since then, which is really kind of funny. So, you know, it was definitely worth it. It was worth all the time, and it was a great experience and something I'll never forget.
Did people recognize you, or, you know, because I don't know that I would recognize you, but that scene, like, I could repeat the lines in that scene like everybody else.
You know, it's so funny because I didn't think it was a big deal, you know, that scene. And people say to me, oh, my God, that was a classic. I remember that scene. Oh, now I remember. And, you know, it was such a, you know, it was a classic scene. But I never, like, when I did it at the time, I was like, you know, whatever, you know, no big deal. I was just, you know, hitting a baseball and stuff like that. But I think it's bigger to a lot of people than it is to me. I didn't think it was really, you know, that big a deal. But I guess it was a pretty funny scene. But, you know, it's just funny how everything played out.
Now, you go on after that. Correct me if I'm wrong. You're at North Carolina. You're finishing up. After that, you end up in the minor leagues. Did you get the minor league call because of the scene, or how did that unfold?
Well, we were just, you know, I wasn't drafted after I finished my 4-year career at North Carolina. And, you know, I went back. I played in some semi-independent league after college, and then I came back to school. And then, you know, I was on the set, and, you know, it's not like there were scouts around. But the Red Sox had lost Todd Pratt in the Rule 5 draft, I think, to the Cleveland Indians at the time. And there was a scout down there that was familiar with me, and, you know, he had called me after that, and he was in North Carolina. So it just, you know, everything just kind of, like, fell into place, and it was just like, you know, the odds of all that happening were just, like, unbelievable. The fact that I wasn't signed when I was at Bull Durham, and then I signed in the off season, and then the fact to be at, you know, in that stadium on the premiere of the movie and then hit a home run, I mean, it was just pretty, you know, unbelievable. It really was.
So with the Red Sox, that must have been timeline Ted Williams as a coach in the organization. You have any interactions with him?
Oh yeah, I did. It was in spring training. Actually, it was before Bull Durham, and he was a instructor. Him and Carl Yastrzemski were, you know, guest instructors, you know, during spring training. And there was one day where I was coming up after, you know, I caught about 50 pitchers in the bullpen, because in spring training, you know, you have to catch so many pitchers, and I was going into the cages, you know, after my session in the bullpen, and I was like the only one there with one other coach, and I started hitting, and I see this guy walking, because the facility, the batting facility, was right in between the major league and the minor league facility. So, you know, I'm hitting, and I see this guy in the background, like, walking, and I'm like, oh my God. And, you know, he stopped, you know, behind the cage, and I'm like, oh my God, that's Ted Williams. Now, I'm not like a celebrity, you know, I'm not starstruck by celebrities or anything. But I knew that was Ted Williams, and Ted Williams is, like, bigger than, like, you know, in terms of baseball, he is God. And, you know, he started talking to me about hitting, and I was just like, this is, like, unbelievable. Like, you know, I was just like, this guy's a war hero. He was the greatest hitter of all time, and I was having a one-on-one, you know, session with him. And that really, like, that was, like, my greatest baseball experience until, like, Bull Durham and when I hit the home run. Because that's just something that, you know, I knew I probably wasn't going to make the big leagues, but, you know, just having something like that with Ted Williams, I knew how big he was and how great he was in the game, just to get some instruction, that was just tremendous.
Oh, I love that. We're talking to Paul Devlin, former minor leaguer with the Red Sox, and again, the guy who took Nuke LaLoosh deep 29 years ago in Bull Durham. Costner's talked about a sequel for Bull Durham. Should there be a sequel for Bull Durham, or do you leave it as it is?
No, I would leave it as it is, because I just don't think that, you know, sequels, I think, in general over the years just really haven't been that great, and trying to duplicate something like Bull Durham I would rather leave it as it is right now. The only way that it could be really, really good is if, you know, if Ron Chilton came back and wrote the movie as well. But I, you know what, people talked about it and stuff like that, but I would just like to see it, you know, how it is, you know, and leave it how it is right now.
I think it, what's going to be interesting
unless they call me for a big scene, of course.
Yeah, if you get a line in the movie, that changes everything. But I think, like, if next summer is going to be the Bull Durham summer, because it's going to be 30 years.
Right.
And so that, I think, you've got to be positioned next summer to be, I think, doing a lot more media. I mean, are you getting calls?
Oh, no, not right now, no.
We're ahead of the curve.
Definitely not.
Ahead of the curve.
Yeah, you are. You definitely are. But, hey, you know, being the former Chico State baseball player that you were,
you know
all about that, right?
That's right. You got to be in front of things. In fact, I'll tell you, let me tell you something, Paul, because I laughed at this, because I wondered if you were a home run hitter, because it was a hanging curveball that you hit. And
the
funny thing was, my dad played for the Durham Bulls in the 1960s. He played in that stadium at Durham Athletic Park. And I've got his Durham Bulls jersey hanging on the wall in my house. But I wondered to myself, were you a home run hitter? Because I have reasonable doubt that you hit a lot of home runs, but you knew how to hit.
Yeah, I didn't hit a lot of home runs in college. And I started switch hitting my junior year in college, because when I went to North Carolina, it wasn't just me. It was like so many other guys that they got changed and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, you had to hit a certain way. And I was just like, I was just in all and knots. And so finally, like my junior year, I said, you know what, I'm hitting left-handed. So I started to hit left-handed, and, you know, I could hit a little bit, and I did have a little bit of power, but I just didn't have a lot of, you know, the big numbers, so to speak. So, and plus, you know, the funny thing about Durham, it is such a short porch in right field. I mean, I went back there last year, and I'm like, this is even shorter than I remember.
Yeah.
I'm like, I could throw a ball out from home plate, you know, over the fence. But, you know, it's just that park was so great because the fans were right on top of you. And it's just like, it was like Fenway Park, but with, you know, the Green Monster in right field. So it was really a great experience. And, you know, as I said, it's for some reason it's followed me all the way, you know, through my career and so forth.
Now, your other scene in the movie, you said you hit a double. Is that the scene where Crash is yelling at you to run?
No, that was – he actually, because that scene took so long to film, like, you know, it took 17 takes. Like, I was so surprised that I actually hit the ball and I got a ball was over the plate that I just kind of sat there at the plate, and Costner did tell me to run, but that you couldn't see that in the movie. So that was pretty funny.
Yeah,
that was pretty funny.
There's one scene in which Costner's yelling, he yells, "Run, dummy," at the guy at the plate. And I wondered, like, if when you're in that scenario, you know, what a great experience to have that cast and be part of it.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, you know, like when we left, we had, you know, because most baseball movies and sports movies back then were brutal, you know, and so I didn't really have any expectations for that movie, like even, you know, doing anything but going to, you know, the video rental store after like 2 weeks. But, you know, and I think the fact that, you know, having the internet around, you know, it came in the mid 1990s or 2000s, that it really just kind of, you know, picked up and stayed around. And then you have all these channels that are playing Bull Durham over and over and over again, that it just became so much bigger, really, than it was at the time. And it just, over time, it grew and it became much more of a classic, and it had such a cult following. And I think that, you know, everybody, you know, you, me, and so many people have played baseball, and, you know, we know the lines, we know how tough it is, and it just kind of related to, you know, so many people in this country who've played baseball, and everybody, I think, you know, could relate to that movie in some way or another.
Paul, I really appreciate your time. You're going to have a busy summer next summer. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, well, I really appreciate you taking the time out to have me on the show. It's great to talk about it, and I thank you so much. for giving me the opportunity to talk about it, John.
All right. Listeners of the show, you're early adopters. I'm going to tweet out a link to Paul Devlin's Twitter page where you can follow him. I'll bet you next summer he gets a little cult action on that. And if they're ever going to trot out a sequel to Bull Durham, which I agree they should not, too many sequels. Like, the Major League thing got ruined. Major League should have just been left alone. I think they did three Major League movies. That was too many for Willie Mays, Hayes and Company. The original was good. And he's right about sports movies. There are some bad sports movies that were made prior to that. And when you look at sports movies, like, it's tough to get a good action sports movie. And Ron Shelton's dedication to the details of baseball and the fact that he had played baseball make that movie work. Give me your best, most favorite sports movie. 503-417-7575 and tell me whether or not they should make a sequel to this movie. And maybe you can give me the movie you'd love to see a sequel for, the sports movie that should be remade. You're listening to The Bald-Faced Truth.
The Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano.
You never know where this show is going to go. You just don't know. I don't know what Alabama's doing better than the rest of the SEC. It's a question for Twitter. Is it Nick Saban? Is it tradition? Is it both? Is it something else? Can it be duplicated? If it can be duplicated, why hasn't LSU done it? You tell me. Also, people who have noticed that I am back on the NHL to Portland bandwagon are wondering why I'm not into MLB to Portland. I would rather be in the Major League Baseball to Portland camp. I really would. I'd love to live there. I'd love to help. I'll break ground on the stadium if they let me. I'll bring a shovel. I'll stay down there working all day. But Major League Baseball is going to go to Mexico and the moon before it comes to Portland. Portland will get used in the Major League Baseball equation if we'll posture in the way that appears to others that we would build a stadium. But just the feasibility of it, the cost of a stadium, I don't see Major League Baseball picking Portland anytime soon, if ever. Monterrey, Mexico, yes. They use Portland to get D.C. Oh, yeah, the Expos would come to Portland. Build a stadium right by the post, in the post office site, downtown. Perfect. Soon as Portland met with them, Washington, D.C. was on the phone. Also, for those out there who are interested, your kids, like, my kid is a volleyball player and she runs some track. She likes that. She's active. And I hear over and over from professional athletes that if you are a young person playing sports, that you should not specialize. I keep thinking about that this summer. Your kids are not the only ones being asked to specialize. The sports news cycle is holding you year-round, recruiting in college football. The NBA summer/bummer league. It's year-round NFL talk, the draft, the combine, year-round coverage, year-round top of mind. It's almost like the leagues now don't want to go dormant at all for fear that you'll lose interest. It's like they're dating you. Got to keep on his mind. So, yeah, the NBA in the summer, no. Major League Baseball in the winter, no. NFL in the spring, no. I like the seasons where they are. I like to keep them where they are. Like, I don't go looking for an ice cream cone in the dead of winter. I don't want people to talk to me about ice cream in the dead of winter. Or frozen yogurt, for that matter. But let's get back to the topic at hand. We had on the show today Paul Devlin, former minor leaguer of the Red Sox, who took Nuke deep in Bull Durham. Give me your sports movie that you think is timeless. If you're flipping the channel, you'll always stop to watch some of it. And if they raised the idea of a sequel, you'd be on board. I don't like sequels with my sports movies. Like, I would have been okay with Rocky just being Rocky. I would certainly be okay with the remake of The Bad News Bears not being made with Billy Bob Thornton. I liked the Buttermaker that was Walter Matthau. The Longest Yard, I was good with Burt Reynolds in The Longest Yard, the original. And if I'm flipping by and the original Longest Yard is on, I'm going to stop and watch it. Give me that sports movie that does it for you. 503-417-7575. Alex is in Dallas, and he starts us off. Alex, what do you got?
Hey, John. How are you?
Good.
So, The Natural, like hands down. And no, they should never, ever try to remake it or make a sequel. And they shouldn't do that with Bull Durham either. I mean, typically, what you said earlier, I completely agree with. Sequels just don't work out. Remakes don't work out most of the time. I think there's a few exceptions. I don't think there's any exceptions to the sports movie. But there you go.
The Natural. I was thinking about The Natural and The Break because Home Run Derby in the Major League Baseball All-Star Game tonight. I don't know if you'll watch it. I watched the College Home Run Derby. It was kind of interesting. The College Home Run Derby, it was interesting to me because, like, you had Omaha. You had big-time home run hitters, some of which I'd never heard of before. And they also had the concept in the way that it was done was they gave them a time period in which they could hit. And I think it was like 8 or 10 minutes or whatever. And then they said, it's just how many home runs you hit in there. And then the last ball counted for two. So I said at the beginning, as the final round was coming down and the guy posted like 17 home runs, that of course the hitter that went second was going to finish with 16 and the money ball coming. Because that's drama. And that's what it's about. It's about entertainment. And that's how it ended up. And the dude from Alabama hit a ground ball down 17-16 to finish. But The Natural is, because I was thinking about that home run that Paul Devlin hit off Nukalushin Bull Durham, and I was thinking, is that the greatest home run ever hit in cinema? And it's not. Roy Hobbs hitting the home run off the lights in The Natural, like even the bed of music for that gets my juices going. That is something.
High fastball, swung on and belted deep into center. Jackson going back, still going back. Adios! Pelota! Pablo Sandoval with a home run into the center field bleachers. The Giants have a 1-0 lead, and that was just a liner.
You know, like I said, I wasn't executing. I tried to elevate there and didn't get it high enough. And obviously didn't quite know he was that locked in at that point, but he was seeing the ball pretty well today.
Sandoval, it's a high fly ball to left. Young back at the wall. It is out of here. Pablo Sandoval, opposite field, 4-0 Giants.
I don't look for nothing there. I just go and swing the ball. You know, just the ball it is, I just going to swing. I don't going to try to do too much right now, especially in this time and the season. You know, all your body's tired, all the things, you know, you feel slow. You have to keep focused on that. I just go in there, you know, get a pitch I can hit.
The 1-1 pitch. He swings and he belts one. Deep center field. Jackson is going back. And a home run! Number 3 for Pablo Sandoval. His first 3 at-bats in this World Series. And Pablo Sandoval looks like the Babe himself has come back to life.
Now he joins Babe Ruth as one of only 4 that have ever hit 3 home runs in a World Series game. Albert Pujols last year, Reggie Jackson when he was with the Yankees against the Dodgers, and the Babe himself did it twice. But this is a down and in slider, the bread and butter for Albuquerque, and Sandoval just golfed it over the center field wall. Wow.
All right, I play that Sandoval 3 home run performance to exhibit why I think the movie The Natural resonates. Because you heard the clips. Gliss, you loved it. You were down there. You were entertained. You're a Giants fan. You're listening to Sandoval 3 home runs. You remember that like it was yesterday. Now I'm going to play this with the music from The Natural over it. And tell me how different it sounds.
High fastball, swung out and belted deep into center. Jackson going back. Still going back. Oh!
said, I wasn't executing. I tried to elevate there and didn't get it high enough. Obviously, didn't quite know he was that locked in at that point, but he was seeing the ball pretty well there.
Sandoval, it's a high fly ball to left. Young back at the wall. It is out of here. Pablo Sandoval, opposite field. 4-0, Giants.
I don't look for nothing there. I just go and swing the ball. You know, it's the ball it is. I just going to swing. I don't going to try to do too much right now, especially in this time of the season. You know, all your body's tired, all the things, you know, you feel slow. You have to keep focused on that. I just go in there, you know, get a pitch I can hit.
The 1-1 pitch. He swings and he belts one. Deep center field. Jackson is going back. And no! A home run! Number 3 for Pablo Sandoval.
If you put that music to a wiffle ball game, you get something there. Give me your sports movie. 503-417-7575. If you're flipping around, what's that sports movie that makes you stop and watch? For me, Bull Durham will do it. The Natural will do it. I'll do it with 8 Men Out, but it's more, that movie's more fun. It's more dialogue based. It's not like the sports action movie that other movies are. Mac is in Gresham. He's up next. Mac, what do you got?
I have Hoosiers, The Sandlot, and For Love of the Game.
Pick one. If you could only watch one of those movies, you could never watch the other two again, what would you watch?
Probably The Sandlot, because that reminds me of just my time growing up.
Yeah. It's cool. I like that. Sandlot's a classic. They made a sequel of The Sandlot. Psh, bad. Rocky's probably the only sequel movie that I really got into. I think of sports movies. Gliss, what's your sports movie? You're flipping around.
Definitely Major League for me. It's just, there's so many great lines in that movie. It's hilarious.
Did you like the sequels or no?
No, didn't like that. I will say I was young enough where I still found the second one somewhat amusing, but it was not nearly as good. Wild Thing Rick Vaughn was all rich and full of himself. It just wasn't the same anymore.
Here's a clip from Major League.
You have financial problems? I could put you onto a great investment guy.
No, I don't have much of a portfolio right now. But, you know, what I was concerned about was why you didn't come up with that grounder that Reichert hit in the ninth.
It was out of my reach. What do you want me to do, die for it?
Raj, could have meant the game.
Year after this, I go free agent. Plus, my agent and I got a couple of plans for life after baseball. So I am not about to risk major injury or to face this property for a collection of stiffs.
There it is. Like that. Major League. Bad News Bears is one, too. Like the original Bad News Bears. Kelly Leake, come on.
What's the matter? What are you doing up there? You trying to win this thing or not? I'll put Miguel in. At least he'll try.
Just get out of here and let me hit. Coach.
Coach. Because Coach is drinking beer in the dugout. Like today, the National Alliance for Coaching would be all over that. Coach is drinking a beer in the dugout. You can't have that. For a second, I had a little league coach that smoked, like in the dugout, smoking a cigarette. You know, is that the same? Having a beer? Probably not. The Bears probably worse. The players, I believe, at some point in the Bad News Bears had beers in their hands. That was a really good movie. And then it lost me. Like, I remember being a kid and going to see, like, the Bad News Bears go to Japan. Nah. Should have just kept it as it was, the original with Buttermaker. 503-417-7575. Give me your movie. I thought we've had a great show. If you are somebody who's interested in a podcast of this radio show, make sure you subscribe to The Bald-Faced Truth on SoundCloud and iTunes. We started today talking about the BFT Foundation Celebrity Golf Tournament. If you missed any of that, it was a phenomenal time. I want to thank all the sponsors, especially Oregon Blinds, oregonblinds.net, if you're going to buy window coverings, because that company has just opened their heart and sponsored the tournament and sponsored Camp Exceptional, as have the Shoe Mill, Anderson Pool Works, First Call Heating and Cooling, High Caliber Millwrights, and Adidas. Shout out to the friends at Adidas who never ask us for a damn thing. All they do is give. Also, for those of you out there who want to get in on next year's tournament, Gresham Ford, by the way, another. I'm always going to forget somebody because there's so many. But if you want to get in on next year, don't hesitate. Don't wait until next summer. It won't happen for you. You have to jump all over it or you miss out. We did put all the photographs of the celebrity golfers and the foursomes on the Facebook page for the Bald Face Truth Foundation. Take a look at that if you get an opportunity. We visited with Chris Haynes, now with ESPN, formerly with Comcast Sportsnet Northwest, who talked not only about the NBA game and salaries, but about the idea of trying to cover a team when you're working for the news partner, which he once did. And he talked about moving from Comcast to the Cleveland Plain Dealer. And he said when he worked at Comcast, it was like he knew he couldn't write like he wanted to write. And it's not an indictment of any one person. But if you are somebody who follows the news and follows any subject, you have to consider where that news is coming from, who's writing it, whose fingerprints are on it, what agendas the teams and the media entities have. It's what we saw in American politics. And people are like, you can't compare politics and sports. Media is media. You've got people involved in all things and agendas in all things. And what I'm saying to you is, don't be a fool. When you are reading the news partner of the team, you're reading everything the team has given its blessing to. So Chris Haynes was great. You can grab a podcast of that at SoundCloud and iTunes. Him talking about that and really framing it as, look, this goes on. This is a real thing. Thought that was interesting. Also, Paul Devlin, former minor leaguer with the Boston Red Sox, former sportscaster, he came after a segment in which I opened the phone lines and I said, what have you done that nobody else has done? It was a great segment of radio. I don't know if we'll do it again. We might, but it's worth a listen. I thought it was hilarious. Laugh out loud hilarious. Ethel Merman? Come on. Guy singing Ethel Merman, doing an impression. If you would have told me today at 11 o'clock or 11:59, right before I go on air at 12, if you would have said, guy's going to call into your show today, he will sing an Ethel Merman song, I would have said you were crazy. And that's where the show ended up. It was entertaining, if nothing else. Lolo's in Vancouver. Lolo, what do you got?
Hey, yeah, I loved the movie, Remember the Titans.
Yeah, I love that.
The sports movie, and I loved it for the music. I loved it for the comeback kids. It was a feel-good story, and they finally believed in themselves. I loved the crazy dance they did on the field, and I would watch that if I saw it. I would watch it again along with Rudy. I liked that one too because they're feel-good movies.
Rudy was the kind of, by the way, we had Rudy, the real Rudy Rudiger, on the show once upon a time. We should get him back on the show. Everybody looks at Gliss when I say stuff like that. Rudy was the kind of movie where I went and saw it in the theater, and I don't remember how old I was, but I know I had tears in my eyes watching the movie because I'm a sports fan, and what sports fan is going to get choked up watching Rudy? It's like a woman watching The Notebook. I mean, come on. If you're a guy, you're watching Rudy, it's okay for you to have glassy eyes. But I left there feeling like, this is the best picture. This is the best movie I may have ever seen. And then you talk to other people who watch Rudy, and they're like, yeah, it's kind of corny. The theme, it's predictable. Like, how much of it is really true? And then it gets ruined because then Rudy Fernandez comes to the Blazers, and you're like, then you hear the Rudy chant, Rudy, Rudy. And then you're like, well, then you saw Rudy in the dunk contest. Whew, that was bad. Let's go out to the phones. Kevin's in Portland. He's got movies for us. Kevin, what do you have?
Slapshot. Remember that stinking root beer?
Love Slapshot. What do you like about Slapshot?
The Hanson brothers. Paul Newman was awesome. It was cool.
Why do you think that the Slapshot doesn't get great run on, like, cable TV? Why is that? Like, I don't flip around and see a lot of Slapshot on.
Yeah, I don't either, but when I do see it, I watch it.
Slapshot? I got to pull that out and watch it.
I want to win that championship tonight, but I want to win it clean. Old-time hockey. Like when I got started, you know? Geez, Toe Blake, Dick Clapper, Eddie Shore, those guys were the greats. I don't know what to say. Christ, it's up to you.
All right, when you get bored with the Home Run Derby, grab Slapshot on Netflix or wherever you can find it. Great radio show today. Special thanks to Curtis Rogers. Two first names, deserves them both. Should have three. Do you have a middle name that's like Johnson, like a last name or what?
No, my middle name's a first name. It's John.
You got three first names.
I'm hogging them over here.
Deserve them all.
Oh, well, I appreciate that.
I had a friend in school where his parents named him all of the disciples' names. Like, you know.
Matthew, Mark, yeah, Luke, John.
Yeah, and that was, I don't know what was on his birth certificate, but he had all the names.
Wow.
I thought, you know, now you're jealous. Yeah. Special thanks to you, by the way. All right. Gliss, you did a fair job today. Congrats to you. I love doing that. Thank you to Adriana, who will podcast the show, and I'm told she's got a Twitter handle. Does she want to go public with the Twitter handle yet or no? She's not ready to. Maybe on tomorrow's show. Always something to look forward here. Make sure you're subscribed on SoundCloud and iTunes. We will be back tomorrow for a Tuesday edition of the Bald-Faced Truth. Thanks to you if you're listening here in Portland on 102.9 or 750 The Game, and to the audience in Eugene on Fox Sports Eugene, 1050 AM and 95.7 FM. I hope you're smarter, and enjoy the rest of your day.